Navigating the supportive therapies following injury or illness is a process. From timing the unpredictable scheduling in acute care to advocating for your family member within the limits of your insurance benefits can feel very overwhelming. But perhaps it doesn't have to. Welcome to Wondercast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. Today, we are joined by Molly Harris, speech-language pathologist and certified brain injury specialist. Listen in as she shares the incredible work of speech therapy, validates the frustrations with insurance limits, and shares tips for staying connected when home life pulls you away from the hospital. This is Molly.
My name is Molly, and I am a speech-language pathologist in Washington State, and I work in a couple different settings. I am seeing patients in acute care in a hospital and also as an outpatient as part of their rehabilitation team. Along with work, I'm also a mom. I have a 10-month-old and a wild 3-year-old puppy who keeps me very, very busy. Yeah, I'm excited to be on the podcast to be able to share a little bit about my job.
Well, we're excited to have you. First of all, maybe for people that are unfamiliar with what speech language pathology is, do you want to just in a little bubble kind of tell us in your words kind of what the profession entails?
Sure. Yeah. So we work across the lifespan in areas of communication, speech, language, feeding, swallowing, social emotional aspects of communication, and cognition. So it's a really wide and deep field that covers a lot of different aspects of life.
When you meet with families, do you find that it's on a scheduled continuum, or is it a one it's and done sort of thing, just in terms of helping our listening audience understand?
So it really depends. Most of the population that I work with, which is with adults, is on a continual basis, but we might see a patient and we'll do an evaluation. And whether that's on evaluating their swallow function or evaluating their cognition or voice, and we might deem that things are within normal limits. So there are instances where we might only see a patient and family one time, but a large majority of our patients we're seeing over a continuum. In acute care, it's going to be a shorter continuum because generally their hospital stays are maybe on the shorter end. And then in rehab, I might see patients for 6 weeks. I might see them for years with breaks in between. So it really depends on the population, and it depends on the diagnosis and the goals that we're working on.
At Wonders and Worries, we do serve the chronically ill population, and majority of those people are parents or caregivers of children. And kind of in looking at that, we have lots of families that have ALS, or perhaps someone in their family has a traumatic brain injury or a brain tumor or maybe an esophageal cancer or a throat cancer that is affecting their ability to swallow. We have families with MS and with epilepsy and things that affect their cognition or their motor functioning. How does speech language pathology serve that community for adults?
Yeah, we are very much involved in the teams. So to kind of pick out just a few of the diagnoses that you mentioned, I work with a lot of head and neck cancer patients. And depending on the location of that tumor, it might be a combination of swallowing and cognition. So it depends. It might be starting off, you know, before they have radiation to talk through what the expectations are and how their swallowing function might be affected. It's providing exercises to help preserve the function of their swallowing while they're going through their procedure, offering support and resources so that they're as comfortable as they can be and as informed as they can be as they're facing these big changes that they're going through because of the medication that they're on. So that's a big piece of the head and neck cancer population. That's usually chronic, that we're seeing them, you know, for quite a while. Hopefully we're consulted early on in their treatment course so that we can start the education. We also work very closely. I don't think you mentioned Parkinson's, but Parkinson's, ALS, we work very closely with those populations as well. Also on a swallowing basis, but also cognition and communication. I'm part of a interdisciplinary team that provides support and therapy services for our population of Parkinson's patients in my community. And that looks like a regularly scheduled appointment where they can see PT, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, respiratory, and their physician. And an appointment like that might look like getting them access to augmentative communication devices so that they can maintain communication with their loved ones as their ability to speak verbally might diminish because of a result of that disease progression. So that's one aspect that's very different in our role, as well as continuing to monitor for signs and symptoms of aspiration, making sure that their swallow is still safe. And if it's not, what recommendations can we make to make it safer and more functional for them? Maintaining quality of life is a huge, huge aspect of our role. And that looks different for every family. And so really inviting families into the goal planning process and the discussion, because their needs and their cultural considerations and their values really helped dictate the direction of the therapy. So it's very multifaceted, and it's really different for each family.
Have you found that there is an introductory phase for families when they first come into the team services, if that's occupational therapy or physical therapy or speech language therapy? Is there like a care coordinator or somebody who kind of navigates these care conferences or goal setting early on, or is that individualized to each discipline that's supporting the family?
That really depends on the setting. I think ultimately it would be wonderful to have that care coordination. And I know in acute care, we have case management that helps to connect with resources before discharging. They're not so much involved with the goal setting. That's going to come down to the individual therapists and what the patient's needs are. In outpatient rehabilitation, it's a similar approach as well. Each individual therapist will devise their kind of planning and goals with, along with the collaboration with the family. And in my example earlier with our Parkinson's group, that's something that we do have care discussions and debriefing afterwards, where we get the entire team together to make sure that we're all on the same page, that we're offering the most comprehensive and holistic recommendations. Because we're only seeing these patients maybe quarterly, we want to make sure that we're tracking them really closely and that everyone is on the same page with their care. So that really allows us to provide a really holistic care to the patient and family. And it's one of my favorite things to be a part of in my current position.
I think one of the things that our ongoing chronic population worries about for their loved ones is, obviously, their hospital stays are sometimes lengthier than maybe just a quick in and out, or because their illness is so prolonged, they do worry, caregivers worry about being present for therapeutic sessions, and especially because the schedule sometimes seems intermittent or maybe as less predictable. And many of our caregivers, this process has become their entire lifetime. So they're still caring for their children at home and trying to do all the other, keep a job maybe. What recommendations do you have for parents that worry that, oh my gosh, I'm going to miss speech therapy coming by today, or, oh, I'm going to miss, you know, our session? What kind of communication tools do you recommend for them to be able to communicate with you and with the team?
Yeah, this is something that I experience on a daily basis with my families that I work with, and is a really valid concern. You want to be a part. I always welcome families, if we're not available, if we're not, you know, maybe we're not visiting that day, to ask their nurse, hey, can we can we run something by the speech therapist? Would you mind letting them know that I have a question about X, Y, and Z? And those messages get passed on to us, and we follow up. So we have a really robust team of therapists that are working. And even if the primary therapist is not available that day, somebody could easily come and read through the chart, get up to speed, and answer any questions that are pressing.
I know that in the rehabilitation community, when you're in that setting and you're maybe there for a more prolonged stay, life does function more on a schedule that's a bit more predictable. So it sounds like the earliest intervention, the most acute care, is probably the most unpredictable in terms of when speech therapy will come by and when you'll go to wound care or OT or PT.
Acute care, absolutely, because the medical piece is ever-changing because it is acute and things are variable every day. And we have to kind of piggyback off of other medical providers. So that's something that it does. It changes the schedule. It definitely becomes a lot more scheduled when it's an outpatient therapy appointment. Obviously, you know your schedule. You're going to be basing that on what your availability is. But definitely the acute care is the most uncertain time, which is really challenging for a lot of families.
This might be kind of a difficult question to answer, but what is the most common question or need that you get from families in one of your settings? You can pick outpatient or inpatient or...
Yeah, I think the question that's the hardest to answer is, when will it be better? When is it going to change? And that can be related to a wide variety of things, but that's kind of the crystal ball question that I get almost without fail from every single family that I work with. And my answer to that question is always different because it depends on the diagnosis. It depends on, you know, other variables. And I see my role in answering that question as being sort of like a flashlight. You know, the question or the room that they're walking into in this diagnosis or the care of their loved one is can be oftentimes dark and scary. And I want to provide the family with as much information as they're wanting to receive to help shine a light in that process. And so the answer to the question is always different, but the approach is the same. And sometimes it's, I'm not sure, and here's what I can offer. Here's what I can tell you. And just really walking with them through that process and meeting them exactly where they are.
For families that are maybe walking into a new diagnosis, maybe their loved one just had been diagnosed with a throat and neck cancer, or maybe they are new to a Parkinson's diagnosis, do you have any advice for them on tools or things that they can do to feel prepared to be in that role at the hospital?
Yeah, I think no matter how prepared you think you are, there's still going to be something that's going to throw you off. So I think that there's a matter of being prepared for that, being prepared for the fact that even with all the information, there might still be a surprise. There are a lot of online resources to read about, you know, official organizations regarding head and neck cancer, Parkinson's. And so those are a great place to start in terms of reading information. I find that a lot of families that I work with, while they might be people who are normally information seeking, it might be a little overwhelming. And so really talking with your therapist about what your concerns are, and they can make really tailored or customized suggestions so that you're not getting too much information too soon that feels overwhelming, so that they can give you little by little to help you navigate those next steps.
That's great advice. And I think that we are all trying to see the finish line, right? Trying to see the Herculean overcoming of this amazing hard in their life right now. And I think reminding them that it's a day at a time, such a smart approach. And I think that if you can make it smaller, then every single task seems a little bit more doable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's what I really love about being part of a rehab team. As therapists, we see the big picture, whether that's the big developmental picture or the big swallowing picture or the cognition picture. And we are able to break that down into small, achievable goals. And that's the sign of a good therapist, is the ability to break it down and to make it attainable. If we're not seeing progress, it might be about tweaking the goals. It might be about changing that or breaking it down a little bit further so that we can see some of that incremental success, one step at a time, one day at a time.
I know a struggle that I hear from a lot of families that we work with is the limitations that insurance benefits can provide. And because illnesses are chronic and progress is sometimes very slow or measured in a different way than what the insurance companies prefer to measure as success, what advice do you have for families that are feeling discouraged that maybe they are only given 12 sessions, you know, a year, or they're running out of their inpatient benefits? Is there any, I know that it's not the therapist, they're up against a hard place because they can't with billing change that. What advice do you have for families that are just feeling so frustrated that they know there's more for their loved one and they know that there are milestones that they could reach if they were given the opportunity, but are feeling like insurance just is not providing that?
If I had one superpower, it would be to fix that system. If I could pick anything to really focus in as one of the just universal frustrations that therapists and families have, it's around the billing and the limited sessions. And so one way that I approach this is from day one, I think about what training can I provide or resources can I provide to the family so that what we're working on in our session is something that families could continue to carry over at home. And I really look at it as developing a home program for families really from the start so that we can maximize their benefits. I think about this a lot. How can we really maximize the number of sessions? And I think that also comes down to having conversations early on about what's important to families and what's feasible so that we aren't wasting time working on something that's not important for a family. And that really allows us to really do the hard work from the very beginning, but spreading it out in a way so that families are feeling encouraged and empowered to be able to also provide some of the same kinds of support or home exercises when they're not in the therapy session.
As a therapist, is it ever frustrating to you when parents come to you with questions about their loved one's care or wanting more resources or wanting more tools? Do you feel like you would prefer that over not having them ask questions or be involved?
I love questions. I really value families being invested in the care of their loved one. I generally will invite families to be a part of the session so that they can see the progress and I can point out the successes and maybe some of the challenges that we're working with. I find some of our most valuable information will come out of those conversations when families do approach with questions. And it gives me a really good idea too about where a family's direction might be headed. You know, if they're asking specific questions, it might actually inform me that, well, we need to make some shifts to what we're doing in the moment to answer that question or to kind of point us in a slightly different direction. So absolutely. And I'll go out on a limb, but I would imagine that every therapist that you're working with would much rather have you ask a question or family ask a question and be involved than to go home wondering.
And if I guess that's not the case, then they need to vocalize that as much as possible. Yes. Advocate for yourself. Advocate for your person. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. So just a day in the life of your work. What do you consider a big win for Molly, the speech pathologist?
Yeah. So in my acute care world, a big win would be, let's say there's a patient that has been NPO or not able to eat anything by mouth during their hospitalization for whatever reason. And maybe they're showing some signs of swallow improvement, but I really want an objective measurement. I want to see the swallowing process with an x-ray. So we might do a video swallow study. And this patient who might have not been able to eat anything for a really long period of time is actually safe to eat and drink. And so I get to make that call and say, okay, this is what I'm seeing with their swallow. This is what is safe. This is what challenges we have, you know, to still overcome, but you get dinner tonight, or you get your chocolate cake that you've been really craving. Those are huge wins. I really get excited about that. In my outpatient therapy, more in that kind of progressive or long-term therapy, some of the wins might look like a patient who has had a stroke that's affected their communication. Maybe they're having a hard time with word finding, and it's affecting their ability to have conversations with their loved ones because they can't think of the words that they want to use. What's really amazing is to see those families and patients go from not understanding what's going on to them to really it's clicking, and then being able to use the strategies and treatment that we've worked on for, you know, weeks or however long, to be able to have a conversation over the phone with a loved one who's out of state, for example. Those are big wins. Being able to take what's important to a family, whether it's eating, whether it's communicating with their families, and helping them reach those goals. Those are really, really big wins and really exciting for me as a therapist.
I think that you're an incredible one. Is there anything else that you want to add that maybe we didn't talk on, or that you wished we had talked about?
Yeah, I think what I want to leave you with is just what an incredibly dynamic field speech therapy is. You know, I started off talking about us working from across the lifespan, and you know, there's lots of different settings. So I know lots of your listeners might be one of the first times they're hearing about speech therapy, or maybe they're learning about different settings, but it's an incredible field that offers a lot of flexibility and a lot of specialization. So from working with medically fragile children in the NICU to working with elderly patients who may have had a fall and suffered a brain injury, there's lots of in between. And from family perspective, just ask. If there's questions, please just ask. You are a valued member of the team. You are central in that team. And so your thoughts and your opinions and questions really matter in the treatment of your loved one.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.